Welcome back to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast. I'm Dr. Michala Benson, a reader in sociology at Goldsmiths, University of London, and the research lead for a UK and a Changing Europe funded project that's all about what Brexit means for British citizens living in the EU27. Today I'm joined by Vicky Barry-Brown, who is a PhD student at Queen Mary University of London, and she is working on English people in Ireland, or rather you're working with English people in Ireland and asking questions about citizenship and identity and belonging, I believe. But today I wanted to talk with Vicky, first of all, about some previous work that she's done, looking at the surge of applications by British citizens for Irish citizenship. And I wanted to start, Vicky, by asking you the question of what spurred your own decision to apply for your Irish citizenship?
Hi. My own decision, for as long as I knew that I was able to apply for an Irish passport, I wanted one, but I just didn't get around to it for a number of years, well, until Brexit referendum, actually. And that was largely financial reasons that stopped me from doing it, but it was something that I always wanted to do. I'd always felt quite attached to my Irish side. My mum's Irish. And it just felt like something really important to me. And when Brexit happened, I thought, this is something that I have to do now. It became a really urgent thing for me to do.
Why do you think that that was the moment at which it became urgent? I mean, you've talked about the fact that obviously you've got family in Ireland, your mum is Irish. So this is, it's not citizenship by acquisition, is it? It's not naturalisation. It's just claiming a passport for a citizenship that you really already hold. But what was it about that moment that made you suddenly think, okay, right, now I've actually got to put my money where my mouth is. I'm actually going to do this thing that I've been thinking about doing for a while.
It's funny because that's a question that I've asked quite a few people, and I don't think I've ever quite got to the bottom of why I myself did it. I think there was an element of wanting to still mark myself as being a European and to maybe officially put myself out there as being Irish, even though obviously that only comes down to me showing someone my passport. And I felt so sad about the referendum. I'd been very, maybe a little bit naive in the run-up to it. I didn't think it was going to happen until the very last probably week or so. And I felt so sad. And I'd never thought that I'd felt very attached to Britain, and even though I've lived here for my entire life. But I felt sad, and I think the Irish passport, making that citizenship official, was probably a little bit of a way of distancing myself from something I felt quite sad about, yeah.
I think that's really interesting, because what it points to immediately is a sense that it isn't necessarily about the legal status of what having an Irish passport does for you, but it's much more tied up with questions of identity, questions about your place in the world, I suppose, for want of a better expression. Of course, Vicky, you're not alone in having applied for an Irish passport in consequence of Brexit. And you've been speaking to people who you've characterised as the Brexit Irish, which I think is such a really captivating phrase for making sense of that. But what do we know about who these people are?
Well, the statistics that I've been using from the Irish Department of Foreign Affairs during 2017, it's estimated that there's approximately 633,000 Irish-born citizens living in the UK. And the projections from those figures, considering children in the UK who have a parent who was born on the island of Ireland, extends this number by 428,065 people who would be automatically entitled to Irish citizenship and therefore be eligible to apply for a passport.
Okay, so that is a lot of people, really. And I know that from some of the statistics that were coming out early on that there were applications from somewhere reaching the region of about 50,000 quite soon after the referendum, within a year, I think. And you just mentioned, and I think this is a really critical point, which is that the people who are eligible that you're talking about, this is citizenship by declaration. What is the process of getting that passport, I suppose, is the right question.
Yeah, I feel like I could probably write an instruction manual on this at this point. So naturalization is a process by which, well, it's partly based on residency, whereby non-Irish nationals can apply for citizenship. It's worth noting that you can't have an Irish passport unless you have citizenship, but it's not necessary to have an Irish passport to be an Irish citizen. The declaration route, which is what I suppose we're talking about, this is the application process that I went through. It has differences depending on where your connection to Irish citizenship is. So for me, it's through my mother. She was born on the island of Ireland in County Cork. So in terms of the practicalities of it, I had to send my birth certificate, proof of name, proof of address, photo identification, a certified copy of my driver's license, which was certified by the person who witnessed my application. One of the great things is where the UK passport has to be signed, the photos have to be signed by someone who's known you for 2 years. In Ireland, the application just has to be signed by somebody who says, yes, that's you. So that's much more convenient. Then you need proof of your Irish citizenship. So for me, that was my mum's birth certificate, my parents' wedding certificate. I also had to reapply for my mum's birth certificate because her parents had only been issued with a short form one and they'd started bringing in long form ones. So I had to apply for that, wait for that to come to me before sending that off again. It cost about 90 euros. I think it's gone up since. And at the time I applied for it, it was less for a new Irish passport than it would have been for me to renew my British one. It can be a bit more complicated if you're a third generation citizen. By that, I mean that if your grandparents are, or a grandparent was born in Ireland, but your parent or parents were UK born. So an example of this is I have a friend, her maternal grandparents are Irish, but her mum was born here. So her mum is an Irish citizen by descent, but because her mum was not born on the island of Ireland, my friend has to be registered as a foreign birth in order to become an Irish citizen. And for an adult, this costs 278 euros. And then on top of that, you'd have the cost of a passport. So it's not quite as easy as I think it's sometimes made out, particularly if you're third generation.
That's really interesting because we often hear about people applying for naturalization. So in France, a lot of the people that I've been speaking to are applying for French citizenship by naturalization, although there are other routes for acquiring citizenship if, for example, you're married to a French national, or I assume by descent as well, which is what you're talking about. But I think what you've illustrated really clearly is the kind of bureaucratic procedure that goes along with this. So, you know, the idea of it being easy to just go and get another passport, which we do hear about from time to time coming through, particularly through social media. What should British people who live abroad do at this point of time? Oh, well, they can come home or they could just apply for citizenship in the place that they live. Even if that's possible, it comes with quite a lot of like testing times, I suppose, and ability to pull together certain amounts of paperwork, financial implications, all of those types of things. So as a kind of a reaction to Brexit, actually even applying, it's interesting to think about what that actually means because, you know, you're creating a bit of work for yourself there, I would say. So what about the people that you talk to? What did they tell you about their reasons for becoming Brexit Irish?
It's the $1 million question. So I recruited 18 participants and interviewed 15. I removed one of the interviews from the analysis, but I did want to mention that now because her situation was that her grandmother was Northern Irish and her grandmother was eligible for an Irish passport, but she didn't want one because it meant declaring herself to be Irish and she didn't consider herself to be Irish. And the woman that I interviewed, her granddaughter, was very frustrated by this because she felt as though it was something very positive that her grandmother could easily do for her and her siblings and her parent, but she wouldn't do it. And her grandmother had voted to remain and was a supporter of Remain, but the person who I interviewed, yeah, she was very frustrated by that. She couldn't kind of connect the two things. So I thought that was quite interesting. And I think there's a lot more in that, but I just wanted to mention that. So for the participants, Brexit was the main catalyst. And I did expect that because I'd asked participants to get in touch who had applied for passports since Brexit. All of the people that I interviewed were pro-Remain. Freedom to live, work and visit Europe were really, really important to nearly all of the participants, as well as traveling around the world, so not just Europe. Many thought that having an Irish passport would make travel easier, or that they would feel more accepted in other countries than they might with a British passport or being British. Having said that, they weren't all sort of like pragmatic travel reasons. Identity was a really key component. I'd asked the question, you have Irish citizenship, would you describe yourself as Irish? Only one person gave an outright no in response, and some felt that they were finally legitimately Irish once they had their passport. The responses were really varied, but they had similarities in the sense that some would reference a form of Irish identity, but felt the need to caveat it in some way. This fits in with research that's been carried out previously by people like Mary Hickman and Mark Scully and Bronwyn Walter, where authenticity can come up quite often. People say that they feel okay saying that they're Irish, say to a British person, but when it comes to speaking to an Irish person, they might play down their feelings of Irishness for fear that they might offend the person they're speaking to, or that they might feel a little bit silly. And I think to comment on that particularly, there have been people, Irish people living in Ireland and Irish people born here, who had their Irish passport prior to Brexit, or the referendum at least, who have been quite sniffy about the Brexit Irish and who think that they're all quite Johnny-come-latelys who've just decided to become Irish. And I was really struck by how many of the participants and people who I've talked to since that have meant to do this for years and years and for financial reasons haven't. And I wonder if the image in the media of the Brexit Irish is a kind of middle-class, super-mobile person who's just travelling around the world and flipping out whichever passport suits them at the time. And I think that's caused a lot of problems in the views that people have of the Brexit Irish. You know, these passports are expensive documents, whether they're British or Irish or otherwise. So having two, deciding to have two, is quite a big financial decision. Two participants decided that their Irish passport would be the only one and decided not to renew their British passports. And these decisions, again, were based on finance and bureaucracy. Most had both, but were unsure if that would continue when their British passports ran out. Doing this actually helped me decide that I wouldn't renew my British passport at the moment, at least. Something that I found particularly interesting was that for some participants, rather than having their passports as markers of Irish or European identity, they seem to be evoking them as ways or options of not having to be wholly British or English at a time when they felt quite conflicted about the country they were born in. It meant that it could be used as a mechanism to distance themselves from things they didn't agree with, such as Brexit or having a Conservative government. They're challenging the shared sense of nationhood a little bit, really, with that. For some, it felt like quite a rebellious act, meaning a partial circumvention of Brexit. Even the few that did approach it with very pragmatic reasons, with the exception of one, this led them to becoming very curious about their own Irish background. A couple of the participants hadn't known their Irish link well or at all. There was a few people who had absent fathers or absent grandfathers. So it wasn't a case that you know, they'd never had access to this before, and finding the documents, whilst it was a bit bureaucratic nightmare or a bit of a pain for people, it also led to quite a lot of curiosity. It took them down paths they didn't know existed. People told me they'd located family houses on Google Maps and got in touch with long-lost cousins, and some even visited Ireland for the first time.
That's really interesting in terms of thinking about the way that Brexit changes the way that people think about themselves, and how in some ways that application for an Irish passport becomes about opening up routes to understanding other belongings, other family belongings, other kin. Those kind of genealogies, I think, are really, really interesting. And I think that, as you said, this idea of the Brexit Irish as being this kind of highly mobile, perhaps, citizen who has the capacity and resource to have two passports, which will give them quite a lot of things, probably does a little bit of a disservice to the very complex ways in which people are undertaking this practice. and what it means. And I think that this is, I mean, this is the kind of the thing that I've struggled with all the way through the project, is that the response of applying for citizenship on the surface could look like people who are already privileged maintaining their privilege. But actually, when you start to kind of scratch the surface and start to listen to what people are telling you, there is something else going on there. That's, and I think it's a mistake for us to believe that the legal status is really what it is that people are necessarily seeking through that. Because it's very, to my mind, it, you know, there are definitely pragmatic and instrumental reasons why people do this, but that's very rarely the whole story.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I wonder to what extent the Brexit referendum acted as a catalyst to allow people to maybe have discussions with family members that they couldn't before, in terms of people maybe not knowing their fathers or their grandparents or things like that. They could be family issues that just weren't spoken about. And something like the Brexit referendum, maybe that just opened up a dialogue with people being able to do that and then applying for passports that way. There's just so much more, I think, going on there than, like you say, somebody picking an easy route to be able to get into another country. I think there's a whole level of depth there that it crosses a lot of boundaries.
Yeah, I think those hidden family histories, those uncomfortable hidden family histories, those kind of unspokens, really, I think you've teased out really well there. And I think particularly that example of this young woman who's frustrated because her grandmother, who is, I assume, a UK passport holder based in Northern Ireland, where she could have the choice of Irish or British or both, does also tease out some of the generational issues and the significance of those markers, not just as sources of like a statement of where you're from, but actually statements of identity. And I think Ireland's a really interesting case through which to think about that, because, of course, of that history between Britain and Ireland that is so prominent within those stories. And I imagine that some of that starts to come out a little bit through your conversations with people as well.
Yeah, it definitely does. And even within my own family, my mum has a British passport and an Irish passport. And one of the reasons she was entitled to a British passport is when her father was born, he was born in an island that was part of the United Kingdom. So it's quite interesting how these different entitlements can come down through. And yeah, the markers, the person that I referred to that had said a hard no in response to if he felt Irish, he was Northern Irish and from a Protestant Unionist background. He kept it a bit of a secret from his family that he was going to have an Irish passport. He didn't think it was something that would have gone down well with the family. And it was only one day that he and his brother got talking, and it turned out they'd both applied for Irish passports within the same family. So yeah, that was quite a funny story. But to them, it was, or at least to the brother that I interviewed, it was very much, this is a pragmatic document that I can use, and it has nothing. But that, in all of the interviews that I did and all of the conversations that I've had about this since, and I did this research 18 months ago now, I've talked to a lot of people since. That's the only person I know who's said very much, this is a pragmatic document. Not one other person has done that.
And I wanted to fast forward a bit, because the other kind of point of intersection between your work and the work that we've been doing for the Brexit Brits Abroad project is your PhD research, which is on English migrants in Ireland. And I wondered if you could tell me a little bit more about, I suppose, the kind of the movement from the work on the Brexit Irish to this, what kind of inspired it, and just tell me a little bit more about the study, which I know is very, it's very new and it's only just started.
Yes, well, after doing the passport research, which was part of my master's that I carried out at the University of Leeds, I'd applied to do a PhD, and I applied with a project looking at Irish nationals who had moved to the UK, specifically those who were living in leave voting towns of the northwest of England. And I had that project accepted at Queen Mary. And then when I started, I'd been having lots of thoughts about a comparative research, and following a conversation with my supervisor, we talked a lot about the movement of English migration to Ireland and realised that there really is not a great deal of work on it at all. and decided that that would be a really great route to go down. There's one significant paper by Professor Mary Gill-Martin, who I know you've spoken to before, and her work was looking at UK nationals who've moved. But there's, as far as I'm aware, there's nothing on English migration to Ireland. And that, this has actually been a topic that I've been interested in for quite a long time. The area that my family comes from in Ireland is one of the areas, I think the big town in the area is the second, has the second highest proportion of UK nationals in the whole of Ireland. And it's a small town. It's a very small town. So whenever I've gone there, I've been aware that there's been English accents around me. And there's talk sometimes that there's people there that are third, fourth generation English living in Ireland, and they have not picked up Irish accents at all. I think that's a little bit of a fallacy, to be honest. I'm not convinced about that. But it is something that's made me quite interested in this subject area.
I think that's really interesting, and it certainly confirms some of the things that I know as well about the absence of English migrants, even UK nationals, actually, from discussions about migration in Ireland, despite the fact that until 5 years ago, I think that's right, until 5 years ago, they were the largest migrant community in Ireland. That's some really interesting background about who we think might be in Ireland, who might identify as English. But I just wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about what you're interested in finding out.
I'm looking particularly at how English migrants to Ireland experience belonging and home. And I'd like to know when, how, and why English people have moved to Ireland. How do they identify themselves? How are they identified by others? What are their social practices? And how do they navigate belonging, home, friendships, families, jobs? I'm asking quite a lot, really. I think it's really important as a field of research to consider how a group of people who, on the face of it, are moving to a country that seems culturally and linguistically similar. What does that mean for belonging and fitting in? I think also due to the complicated and lengthy history between the two countries, Ireland as a former colony, which in the lead up to and following independence sought to get rid of English influences, that was part of their manifestos, really. Where does that leave Englishness in Ireland now? I've had some anecdotal information about why English people move to Ireland. And one that keeps coming up quite often is nuclear war. a few different people have told me this, that during the 1960s particularly, or the 60s and the 70s, people were looking for a place to move that was still within Europe but was as far away from nuclear issues that they could get. And a lot of people moved from Ireland. So I don't know if, moved to Ireland. So I don't know how true that is, but during the research that I did on passports, hostage situations kept coming up inexplicably during the interviews. So I'm wondering if nuclear fallout is my hostage situation of this round of research.
That's really fascinating. And I mean, I know that you said it's anecdotal, and it reminds me of a few, that there are other places where I've done research where people talk about the last place to suffer from environmental catastrophe and things like that. So people rationalize things in quite wide-ranging ways, which probably tell you about histories at a particular point in time and what was going on at that time. And actually, now that you mention it, I had heard kind of discussions about nuclear issues, people who'd campaigned for CND and things like that, and then left Britain in the, you know, whenever it was. I think it's really important to listen to those things, but I really like this focus on what does it mean to be English in Ireland and kind of what does Englishness in Ireland look like, which I think is a really interesting starting point for doing research, because I think that quite often we assume that, you know, national identity is one thing and it's static. And certainly that seems to be what's coming out a lot in the contemporary discussions around Englishness, particularly in respect to Brexit. So I think that this is a really interesting kind of anchoring point for saying, well, actually, what does it mean to these people to be English? And how do they populate that idea of Englishness? So that's been really fascinating, Vicky. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It's been lovely.
You've been listening to the Brexit Brits Abroad podcast with me, Dr. Michala Benson. If you're not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so by searching for Brexit Brits Abroad on iTunes and Libsyn. And to join in the conversation, follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at BrexpatsEU, and you can visit our Facebook page, Brexit Brits Abroad. To find out more about the project, visit our brand new website, that's brexitbritsabroad.org. And I'll be back in a couple of weeks with the next episode.